Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. It's always a wonderful joy when you are in the neighborhood, stopping in for a moment to have a conversation, have a little chai, have a little bourbon, have a little bit of whatever yum-yum you have to sit down and enjoy a conversation with some very fine people. And we've got one of the finest with us today. he's a piece of shit. No, actually, he's a good guy. He's my old partner. He's my running buddy. You know him. You've heard him. You love him. You've actually watched his work on the big screen. He is Rick Unger, the host of The Rick Unger Show, a nationally syndicated two-hour political and news commentary show. He is a progressive, although, look, there are days, I tell you, I don't know how progressive this brother really is. But okay, we'll go with that. Who has made his mark in radio and television by being willing to mix it up with anyone with an opposing political point of view. You heard him previously hanging out with me over at SiriusXM on the POTUS channel when we were Steele and Unger. All every day he would come in saying Unger and Steele, and was a political commentator, contributor for Forbes, Newsmax, and Fox. And of course, earlier he had his foray into Hollywood, where he was a writer and producer in television, particularly in the animation industry. He's a good guy. Welcome back, Rick Unger.
Are we out of time now? That was the longest introduction ever.
All your props in, brother, because I'm proud of you.
I got to say, I feel so much more at home now that you called me a piece of shit, because one of the finest people thing was not going to fly with anybody.
This is the difference between doing my podcast and your radio show.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to say stuff like that on the radio. I'm jealous.
You're not. No, Rick, I knew that we'd get. No, actually, if I really wanted to get you, I would call him Unger. He hates
that's
Unger.
Right. That's right. See, you know. Mr. Unger or Unger not happening. I always say if my mother wanted to call me Unger, she would have named me Unger Unger.
I love this, man. Rick, I'm real pleasure having you on, man. Excited.
Oh, fun, man.
I had the pleasure, folks, of doing his nationally syndicated radio show. So Turnabout is only fair play, and we wanted to continue the conversation. But before we do, Britney Spears, what's your take on Britney Spears?
Oh, I'm sorry. I fell asleep there for a moment.
No, but I mean,
why does everybody care? Look, I hope Britney Spears has a wonderful life. I've enjoyed her music. I'm sorry that she's had these problems. I cannot believe that it is leading the news for what feels like an eternity now.
Well, I think it's the situation of agency and women who are often in this situation, this predicament, and the fact that this woman's, you know, almost 40 years old,
yeah,
and can't manage her own affairs because her daddy won't let her or a court won't let her. So, yeah, I can see the value of it. I can see the value of the conversation as an example. Don't you get a sense that
there are things going on there on all sides that we don't know anything about, and it's probably none of our business?
Yeah, I do have that sense. I do have that sense, and there, you know, these court proceedings, don't necessarily get to reveal too much because of the way they're run, but I suspect that there's probably more there. There is a reason. There has to be a reason,
yes,
legally and otherwise, for why this type of order has been in place on her for so long.
Yeah, I that would seem to be logical. I mean, I was a little bit surprised, as you noted her age. I was a little surprised that in the initial hearing a few weeks ago that the judge came back with a decision she didn't want. The judge left the conservatorship in place. And I'm thinking, all right, this judge has no axe to grind here. There's something here that I am unaware of, that I am not seeing. And you know what? I probably shouldn't be aware of it. This is such a private affair. Now, to be fair about this, Brittany is the one who is making it public. And right. It is working to her benefit because of the public support. She did get to pick her own lawyer. Honestly, I can't understand why she never would have been able to pick her own lawyer in the past. That seems kind of bizarre.
Right. But
I don't know, man. I mean, there are so many important things going on in the world. I guess it's, I understand the prurient interest that Americans have. I mean, news is entertainment to us. And right. It has taken us exactly where people like you and I knew it was going to take us.
Yeah.
But goodness gracious, it is leading the damn news.
Well, I just thought I'd bring it up. I appreciate you coming on the Michael Steele podcast. And thanks so much. That does it for this episode, folks. And we'll get together again next week.
Maybe we'll have another celebrity we can talk about.
For another riveting conversation. All right. So let's turn our attention to less hyperbolic issues like infrastructure plans, Cuba, filibusters, and primary elections. The president had an interesting week this week. He gave what I thought was a rather compelling speech, a compelling argument for voting rights, for moving the needle on voting rights, for setting out what we're seeing happening as the threat that it is to the one of the fundamentals of our republic, which is the Constitution and the right to vote. But for me, Rick, I'm still looking for the action plan. I got all, you know, the nuts and bolts and what's at stake and what's at issue. Where's the action on this? And what should the action be?
Well, there is no action, as you know very well. There is no action, it would appear, without some kind of an understanding amongst all the Democrats that we'd be capable of making some changes or some modifications, something to the filibuster program. I mean, that is what's standing in the way of any of this legislation getting through the United States Senate. That is not going to change. I think anybody who is going to say that, well, because the president made such a great speech, and it was a great speech, I found it very good, that is somehow going to change the reaction to all of this of Mitch McConnell or any other Republicans, that's just not going to happen. And we know that. Therefore, there's only one way that this legislation can get through. Now, it may be possible to get some movement on this if you make some changes in the language to these bills. I don't think that's it. I think the only way you get there is if those Democrats who continue to support the filibuster without any modification, if they finally decide that for the good of the nation, they have to move. And that is the only action plan that I can see.
I agree with that, I guess. To me, there just seems to be an unwillingness to actually do the politically explosive thing, to do the politically required thing in the moment. Because you and I know if Republicans found themselves in this predicament, there would not be the level of, you know,
clearly, we would have been done with this discussion weeks ago.
Yes.
And the filibuster would have been changed.
Yes. So what is it that Democrats don't get about what's happening right now and how they're getting punked every single day by Republicans who are basically looking at them saying, I dare you. I dare you. You don't have the balls to do it. I dare you. You won't do it. Chicken shit. You won't do it. I mean, every day it's like a schoolyard. I'm literally on a playground watching the bully, watching the 8-year-old, you know, 4'7" bully, the, you know, the 15-year-old, you know, 6'2" student. I don't understand.
Well, that is what they're doing, to be sure. But we know that that's not really what's in play here. I don't think most, I mean, I think there's very few Democrats, very, very few Democrats who have an issue with making reforms to the filibuster. The problem is that the circumstances line up in such a way where two of those Democrats, obviously Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, they have come to a conclusion that for their own personal political fortunes, that they are best off taking the position that they have taken. We are never going to know if that's a righteous position. We all have suspicions. But the fact is, it serves their interest to take that position. Now, it doesn't matter if every other Democrat in these United States of America see it differently. If those two continue to take the position they're taking of maintaining the filibuster precisely as it is, it just doesn't matter. And it does give the Republicans, as you say, it gives them the opportunity to sit there and thumb their nose at us like, what a bunch of chicken shits.
Well, then it's game, set, match. And
yes,
and they've given. So basically, before it even starts, the Biden administration's work is done, because you've got
certainly on this issue.
You've got, well, virtually every issue. Name me the issue that's going to get passed.
$3.5 trillion
social infrastructure plan? Hell no.
Well, that takes us into a different discussion.
How is that a different discussion?
Because, first of all, it's not the filibuster at play. We have to make that discernment there. It is now, it's the same members of the Senate that are in play. I agree with that. You're going to have Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema being willing to go along with the rest of the Democrats to get to a reconciliation bill that can be passed. But I think, especially with what I am hearing, I don't know what you're hearing. What I'm hearing coming out of the Senate right now is kind of a love fest among the Democrats. You've got Joe Manchin basically saying, I don't oppose this reconciliation bill. I simply want to know how we're going to pay for it. Now, that is a clever way sometimes of saying, of course, I oppose it.
Well, because you said something about, you know, we got to, you know, depends on you know, our global competitiveness. I'm right. Like, what the hell does that have to do with?
Well, that has to do with raising the tax rates on corporations, which is part of how the administration wants to pay for it. They want to pay for it by increasing taxes on people who make over $400,000 a year, and they want to pay for it by increasing the corporate tax. So that's where Manchin says, well, I don't know about this corporate tax thing, because this could impact on our ability to be competitive.
How the hell
else are you going to pay for it? Yeah, well, of course. You're going to have to pay for
it. The only people who have the money are the wealthy in the corporation.
That's right.
Republicans gave it all to them 2 years ago.
But what Manchin could be saying there, and you're right, the Republicans did give it to him, but what Manchin could be saying there is, I'm open to a discussion on raising back up the corporate tax rate. However, I'm not open to a discussion of going as far as I've heard some of the Democrats want to go. And that may be where he is aiming his plan here. We'll see. I don't know. You know, I think I
appreciate your very good and sharp analysis on this. And I think you pretty much are right about it. I think, though, the politics overwhelm the moment.
Very possible.
And the Republicans know that. You know, the Republicans are playing with sharpened knives and loaded guns. And Democrats are sitting at the table with no weapons, none. And to the extent that they have a weapon, they refuse to even pick it up. Well, so I don't know where they think, how they think this ends with a Republican Party and I say this as a member of this party, and I don't say it with any joy, right?
Right.
A Republican Party that is systematically continuing its deconstruction of the administrative state.
Yeah, I get the point. And I'll tell you what, you have every chance in your assessment here of being right, as I may, because I don't know which way this is going to go. On the one hand, you know, there's a reason that we got that bipartisan agreement on physical infrastructure. Republicans recognize it is as much in their benefit to be supportive of that as it is to Democrats. So they want that to happen. The problem that we're going to encounter here, and I know you know this, is that the more this this reconciliation bill, which is where the big money is, right? The more that is coupled with the bipartisan agreement, the more it's going to push Republicans to oppose the bipartisan agreement. So you could end up with these really weird combinations here. You could end up seeing that bipartisan agreement passed, but not seeing the reconciliation bill passed. If people like Manchin ultimately come down against it, you could see it exactly the opposite, where the Democrats could say, well, all right, we'll do our part. We'll pass the more expensive human infrastructure bill and reconciliation, but the Republicans end up stopping the bipartisan bill. You could see that, and you could see both of them pass or neither of them pass. It is absolutely wide open, and this is why I'm curious what you're getting, Michael, since you are closer to those halls of Congress physically. You know, the Democrats are strutting around. We saw this yesterday saying they are feeling extremely confident that they're going to succeed in getting all of these through, and it's going to be the biggest social contribution since the Great Depression. Are they kidding themselves, or do you think they're posing, or do you think they could be right?
I'm interested you say that. I think that they could be closer to right than to just posing. I think for a lot of what Manchin and others, you know, beat their breast about how does, you know, what the pay fors are and where the money comes from and all of that, they're going to have a meeting of the minds, because here's the reality, particularly for someone like Manchin. You can't be against everything your Democratic president wants.
You wouldn't think.
You just can't. You got to give the president something. So if you're not going to let him, if you're not going to give him voting rights, right? You damn sure better give him reconciliation.
Now, that's exactly what I think. And that's really what led me to make the separation between the two. When you suggested that if you can't get through voting, maybe nothing. I think you've got that precisely right. I think that Manchin may screw the administration on voting, but will come through for them on infrastructure.
Well, and then, because then he can go back and he can, you know, he can make his constituents happy about bringing resources home, yeah, for infrastructure, but then not piss off that red base by actually, you know, allowing Black people to participate in the electoral
right.
process.
Exactly.
So that,
you know, I see that as a very real possibility.
And then and then in 2022 he gets unelected. So okay, there we are.
Do you think that does get him unelected in 2022?
I don't know. I know Republicans are going after. I mean, at this point, what, I mean, he who's he help? Whose side is he on? I mean.
Yeah, but there does seem to be this emotional attachment between the people of West Virginia and Joe Manchin.
No, he was their governor and he's been their senator. You're absolutely right.
And I think everybody just feels he's a good guy.
He is a good guy. I personally yeah. like him. He's a good guy. All of that. But I'm just, again, I, you know, unfortunately, I stew in the pot of politics. And I just know the politics for Republicans. He doesn't work for them, because at the end of the day, he's still a Democratic vote.
Right. Right.
And for the Democrats, at the end of the day, they see him. I mean, you know, I've actually heard a Democrat say to me, what the hell is he there for? What good is he? He's not.
Well, there is an obvious solution, and we've talked about this before. The obvious solution for Joe Manchin is you become a Republican.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the obvious solution. But then it presents a very interesting, unique problem for Republicans, because I see Joe Manchin not being that easy to play with on a lot of the things that Republicans are going to be pushing. And so he's in an interesting spot. I think right now, you know, he's trying to figure out how to get a half a loaf. And the problem is the bread may be stale. and it just may be. So we'll see. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll have more conversation with my buddy Rick Unger right after this.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Michael Steele Podcast. We're having a conversation with none other than Rick Unger, one of the finest human beings on the planet. He's a good brother.
It's not what you said earlier.
That's not what I said earlier.
I'm just saying.
This is the makeup part. there are global considerations or concerns that the president has to confront right now. And some of those concerns have actually found themselves in our backyard. As Cuba has become the focus again of interest and possible political entanglements. What's your assessment with what's going on right now in Cuba? You've got the Obama administration opened our doors, the U.S. doors to Cuba, tried to reestablish that relationship. Trump pretty much kind of shut it down. And now in the face of COVID and just the state of things going on there, where the economy is stalled, COVID has pretty much shut off the economy, tourism especially, and the food lines and the lack of medicines, the lack of electricity and other things. Citizens are taking to the streets. Yeah. And they're beginning to express their disdain for this communist regime and a communist economy. What's your take?
It is so screwy, and it's being made all the screwier by the really lame efforts that Republicans in this country are trying to use it as a way of using it as a cudgel against the administration that make no sense. Look, I do not support a communist regime in Cuba. Never have. Can't imagine I ever will. I don't particularly like communist regimes such as what we have seen there all these years. At the same time, there are certain realities that we have to recognize. Number one, we are part of the problem. Part of the reason that they have to have created their own vaccine for COVID in Cuba, and that's what they had to do, was because we played a role behind the scenes in embargoing the Europeans from sending that vaccines to them. And that's part of what we're supposed to be doing. Our restrictions that have been put on, then eased up. I mean, this obviously goes all the way back to John Kennedy. They play a role in why you have food shortages and other problems in Cuba. At the very same time, we don't want to do things to support a communist government. We all are painfully aware of the political price that's paid if an administration in this country does anything that even looks like they're being supportive of the what's left now of the Castro regime. There are all these competing things happening. In the meantime, you get Marco Rubio screaming bloody murder because Joe Biden did not give a public comment in support of the people of Cuba within 24 hours. Well, what Marco Rubio did not tell you is that Joe Biden ran for office promising to lighten up on these draconian restrictions that the Trump administration had put into place. And to this very day, he has not changed a one of them. So if you are anti the Castro regime there, or now what's left of it, you should be lauding Joe Biden for not changing that. But they're not doing that. They want to criticize him. At the end of the day, Michael, I think that what we're going to realize is that for all these years, we have tried to use sanctions and restrictions and embargoes to try and force the communist government out of Cuba. It didn't work. And the only people who are paying the price are the people of Cuba who we profess to support. Maybe it's time to take a look at a different approach to that. But in order for that to happen, you've got to have both sides stopping with this political game. If you actually want to help the Cuban people, then you have to look at it as helping the Cuban people, not helping your own political opportunities. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you look at that effort by our government and, you know, our decision to get rid of the Castro administration and to wipe communism out of Cuba. Yet that's what the people want.
And even if they don't want it, we haven't been very successful. We haven't been at all successful.
My point is, at the end of the day, very much as we saw on January 6th, our response to those Americans who wanted to reinstall Donald Trump as president, it's the same. It's that same, you know, sense of, you know, for the rest of us, like, oh, hell no, you know. And so for, you know, I think we fundamentally have to understand whether it's Cuba, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's any place else. At the end of the day, people are going to be where they want to be, and they're going to allow for what they want to allow for. And if they don't want Castro and communism, then ultimately it will be the people
to make that change,
which
and
is why
I also... You're right. And I have to point out one thing so it doesn't get away. With all the criticism that we've listened to, have you heard so much as one, just one, elected Republican official come up with the way we ought to be handling it?
No, of course not.
Not one.
Not one. And in fact, the administration itself seems to be at odds with the words of the president. I mean, the president, you know, he puts out a statement in which he, you know, basically, you know, talks about, I'm there to support those who are seeking freedom, right? And various, you know, other agencies from the State Department, officials on down were like, well, you know, We're here, you know, to express our concern out of, you know, rising COVID cases and deaths and medicine shortages. And so the president is talking about freedom fighters and the State Department is talking about, oh, we need to get some more meds. You know, so it's even there you have this sort of conflict of ideas of how to address what's happening 90 miles off our shore.
And I think it's more a conflict of political ideas and concerns. Because let's face it, there's only two ways we can go about this. Well, I suppose there's a third. If you want to try invading Cuba once again and overthrowing the communist government there, okay, I don't think you're going to find a lot of support for that amongst Americans. So that leaves you with two choices. You can crack down and get harder on the government there, and all that's going to do, which is what Marco Rubio, I guess, is telling us to do, all that's going to do is make the situation even tougher for the people there who are suffering as the government does what they always do and says that these protests are nothing but Yankee imperialists stirring it up. So you can go that route, or you can ease up on the government so that they will ease up and make the situation better for the people there. So you know what? Take your pick, but those who are criticizing, pick something. Make a suggestion. Don't just sit there and criticize because you got no solution yourself. We're not that stupid.
Yeah, and that's the key part of it right there. You've got to come to the table with solutions. And it, again, whether it's dealing with Cuba or dealing with voting or dealing with infrastructure or any of the other big issues, what we see right now is a lot of posturing, grandstanding, a lot of noise and bloviating, but very little in terms of, okay, here's our counterproposal. We'll see your $3.5 or trillion dollars, and we'll, you know, we want to decrease it to 1.2 with these programs. Or we see what's happening in Cuba, and despite both the Obama and Trump administration sort of ham-handed handling of this, here are steps that we think can stabilize this country. And begin to maybe set it on a course where the people will ultimately decide to change from this autocratic communist regime to a more democracy-oriented country. But you've got to put something on the table.
Well, but you're thinking in terms of long-term solutions, and long-term solutions don't help politicians trying to win elections in the state of Florida.
No, they don't. No, they don't. But that's the problem. You just put your finger on the nub of the problem, is that our leaders no longer govern. They are basically in election cycles. So there's no one thinking longer term. There's no one thinking about how the actions that are taken today will impact decisions tomorrow and account for that and factor that in.
Well, nobody except you and I.
Well, that's it. So on that front, talking about elected leadership and the kind of men and women who are seeking office. On the right, you have basically QAnon conspiracists, Trump loyalists, sort of blanketing the primary process with the further encouragement of Dear Leader. On the Democratic side, you have more and more progressive candidates entering the arena. And I would argue that the country really wants neither of those two types of candidates. But that's the point. How will the Democratic Party shift, or does it shift as more progressives enter the arena, the primary space, running for elective office? Very much as we saw with Tea Party and eventually, you know, what we would call Trump loyalists.
Right. I think you're putting your finger on something that people are just starting to wake up to. I know I talked about this today on my program also. It's very real. We all focus on all of these primary challenges coming to incumbents that are Republicans coming from the right. And we have not been focusing on some of the challenges coming at mainstream Democrats who serve in Congress or elsewhere coming from the left. And they are very real. And they are very, very disturbing to the Democratic leadership in Congress. This is going to be a really interesting situation. One of the things that I think you will find are going to help what I'll call the status quo Democrats. A lot of these more effective challenges are coming from candidates who identify as Democratic socialists. And I don't think that the term democratic socialist has ever really gained the steam in this country that some people seem to think that it has. I think that that actually could hurt a more progressive candidate taking on, you know, somebody like Carolyn Maloney, who's being challenged by somebody like that. Mm-hmm. Congressman Davis in the Chicago area, who's being challenged by somebody like that. I think it's probably going to be hurtful. at the same time, you know, some of these people that they've chosen to go against were interesting choices because they are people who themselves, when they got started, they challenged a status quo Democrat and took away their seat from them in primaries. So it makes it much harder for them to defend, you know, against people doing that to them. It is going to be interesting, and I think it's going to become a larger focal point as we get closer and closer to midterms of what the people in the country are focusing on.
You actually make some interesting points and raise an interesting idea for me that as I look at all of this, I look at the New York, the recent Democratic mayoral primary in New York
yes.
City, ranked choice voting, and you know, everybody sort of had their view on the ranked choice voting process. But I looked at the outcome. I found it very interesting that two progressives, or at least one, a progressive and a half, because I don't know how progressive Andrew Yang really is.
Right.
But his at the his 11th hour sort of, you know, cozying up with Catherine to sort of create this deal. You know, we'll be each other's second choice.
Right.
I thought it was very interesting that that did not work. And in fact, the smarter move would have been, instead of Catherine sort of playing with Yang, if she had played with Maya Wiley.
I completely agree.
That would have changed, because basically the New Yorkers elected a former Republican as mayor, you know, as their nominee, you know, who's probably, he's not progressive. He's a law and order. He's a former cop, you know, all of that. Right.
Yeah.
And I thought the dynamics that you raised, at least it raised for me, a very interesting, if they had changed that game just a little bit and stopped trying to be cute by half. By thinking Yang was really, because Yang felt like a rock after a certain point, and no one seemed to really pay attention to that because they just sort of worked off the branding and the name ID from the presidential run. But voters will always tell you what they're thinking. They always will. They just can't help it. They will. And with his numbers were telling me, at least, nah, they're not buying what he's selling. So who are they turning to? And they were looking at someone like Maya Wiley. They were looking at the progressive someone who was authentically progressive in the race. How do you think that works in some of these primary situations going forward for voters? Are they really going to be that averse to a progressive, or is it an opportunity that, you know, a progressive can make the case? I don't know. New York raises some really interesting questions for me.
It's too early to know. I will tell you this. I think you've got it right about what I would also call a mistake in choice in Catherine Garcia teaming up with our one-time presidential candidate, Mr. Yang. Yang never got any real traction simply because he was never really able to stand up and say, look, here are the problems I see in New York City. Here are the solutions that I see for New York City. His campaign right from the outset was much broader, you know, some of the things that we had learned about him in the presidential campaign, and that tends not to be that valuable in the mayoral race. Now, I don't know this. I have absolutely no indication, but I would bet you that Garcia was clever enough to understand what you just said. And I would bet you dollars to donuts that she did first approach Maya Wiley with this idea. And Maya Wiley decided to go it alone.
Yeah, that's actually a fair point. That actually is a fair point. And it does make some sense. And Maya's probably kicking herself now, because
I think so.
Given the way the votes fell, it'd be very interesting. And Ocasio-Cortez is already kind of drawing the lines for Eric Adams, saying that the country, the city needs investment in humans, not guns and
Right. But I got to tell you something. I think ultimately Eric Adams was always destined to win.
Why is that?
I just think that he kind of is where the city of New York is right now. It's in a weird spot, in a weird place right now. The crime numbers really have impacted people. And he had the edge when it came to that issue.
How does that play out for Democrats going forward, that crime issue and candidates like Eric Adams winning primaries going up against law and order Republicans?
Well, in New York, it won't matter. Eric Adams will win the mayoral race. In other cities, it could matter. It depends. You know, one of the realities of being a law and order Republican, you're not going to find too many of them, I don't think, that are going to be able to say, hey, I'm a law and order Republican. I have a strong feeling about how to keep you all safe. But at the same time, I have a pretty moderate, I won't say progressive, social agenda. You're not going to find too many of those candidates. If you could find a candidate like that, you'd have to feel pretty good about them in the mayoral race. But I don't think there's a lot of them there. And I think more likely you'll see Democratic candidates who've already got the more moderate social record established taking a turn towards being a little tougher in the law and order category. Easier to do.
Rick Unger, you always bring the sparks, my friend. I really appreciate you having time to come on the podcast and hang out with us and enlighten us with your dulcet tones.
That is the goal, enlightenment.
Rick Unger is the host of The Rick Unger Show, a nationally syndicated two-hour political news and commentary radio show. Check him out on local stations and your neighborhood. Rick, it's always a pleasure. Until next time, folks, be safe, be well. Don't forget to do the download thing. You know I love it when you do the download. It makes me feel all yummy. And give us a 5-star rating. That's always helpful, too. It helps a brother out as much as possible. You know what the rest of it is. You gotta get the vaccine, people. We didn't talk about the vaccine today, Rick, because I'm kind of tired of talking about it. I'm tired of trying to help stupid people save themselves from being stupid. But anyway, I can't do that anymore. So anyway, folks, until next time, be safe, be well. God bless.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.